Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to Stop Child Abuse Now Show. This is. Can you hear me?
Sorry. Yes. Yeah,
okay. I thought you were saying that. Yeah. Okay. We'll start that again. Yes, we will. Okay. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Show. This is scan number 2843. That's 2843. I'm Carol Levine, and I am Vice President of NASCA. And tonight we're going to have a Q&A. Okay, but we have a lot to talk about, because when there's child abuse, there's an awful lot always to talk about. And the telephone number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And if you want to, talk along with us here, I have Michelle Bless on, and that always makes me very happy. She's from Cincinnati, Ohio. She is a returning NASCA family member. She comes on every once in a while, and this is so good. We need Michelle. She's a wonderful person. And she's a survivor. She's an activist. She's a minister. And she's a NASCA volunteer. She's also the author of the book, Out of the Darkness, Michelle Bless Story. And she's so much more than that. She's also a counselor. And she understands the streets like I understand the streets. She goes into prisons, and she talks to people. And she goes in the shelters. She talks to people in the shelters also, and all these kind of things. And truly a survivor, but also an activist, okay? So when I can have Michelle on, that always makes me happy. It makes me a happy activist. Yes, it does. So anyway, I have the mission statement here, which I always choose to read because, quite frankly, it's something that should be read so that people who don't understand NASCA, they might get a little better idea. Now, this is our mission statement. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two different ways. Number one is educating the public, very important, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone, and believe me, it does. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Okay, now that's just a little bit of what we do. I wish that people would get really involved with our NASCA website. That's naasca.org. That's naasca.org. I'm the night owl, okay, so I get all kinds of phone calls, and that's okay. I'm usually up all night anyway. I got used to that with some of the jobs that I worked at, so it doesn't bother me at all. But one of the things that people are feeling right now, of course, is scared because of what's going on in our country. And then also, we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, or next week is going to bring, or a month, what's going to happen, okay? And then because of the pandemic people are staying inside more. And then there's a lot of people that don't believe in the pandemic, and they go out and they get sick. And then there's all kinds of stuff going on. People don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. I don't know what to do. I go into a restaurant, Michelle, and I'll sit down to eat, and I have to have a mask. Are you nuts? All right, you go into the place, you're wearing a mask, you sit down, but you can pull the mask down and eat, but then you have to pull the mask back up before you leave the building. What? It makes no sense
well,
to me.
You know how I feel about a restaurant right now. Let me say this real quick to let the listeners know that I got
Well, that's right.
I went to Papa Do's seafood place. It's a very expensive restaurant. That's why I said the COVID don't discriminate. And I caught the COVID Sunday from that restaurant. And that's one of my favorite restaurants. And I ended up talking to the manager, matter of fact, today before I came on today to the show. And once I let him know that, you know, Papa Do's is my favorite restaurant, I've been going there for years, but I was very disappointed by receiving a dirty glass with my drink. I didn't even look at it, and I'm busy drinking and drinking until I looked at the glass and saw it was dirty. So something, you know, said it wasn't even clean. Someone made a drink in a dirty glass. So he asked me, he said, I didn't think that you would automatically catch COVID that fast if COVID was in here. I said, honey, if the germ is in the air, it can attach to you. It sure can. And then it's on you. They're going to send me a gift certificate, you know, in the mail. But, you know, I've been cautious. This is the third year I've been cautious these past 2 years. And then I knew something was wrong when I walked in, and I smelled sickness in the air. My nose is very, very keen, and I smelled germs and sickness. And I was complaining to the people I was with. They were taking me out for my birthday. I said, I just smell sickness in the air. And I got a mask on. And they was like, wow, you know. And then when we got the appetizer, and I would take the mask off to eat, put it back on my mouth, and I kept feeling myself getting sick. And then by the time my entree came, I couldn't even eat. I was feeling really weird. And I had mine packed up, and then by the time I got home, I was in full pledge. I was in sickness. So the good news is that I don't have the third strand. And can you hear me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Listen,
oh, okay.
Go ahead.
I have not lost taste or smell. Thank God. So I'm quarantined in the house until February the 2nd. So that's pretty much it right there. But the only symptoms I will say that I'm feeling is the stabbing pain, you know, in my body and in my head. But other than that, I'm doing okay. They had me on IV. I had to go to the hospital, too. And matter of fact, I went to the hospital at 2 this morning. I didn't get out of the hospital until 4 in the seat. I think, Carol, you called. I got home an hour before you called me, so I don't know what time it was. It must have been like 5 or 6 or something, or 4 or 5. So I'm feeling a lot better because they put a lot of stuff in me. They had me on IVs, and I'm kind of glad I went in the hospital to get that, whatever they put in me, because even though I'm still sick, I'm not like I was laying here since Sunday. I thought I was going to die. I ain't going to even lie. And I like I said, I didn't lose taste, I didn't lose smell, but I had diarrhea, I had nausea, you know, and then the vomit and nothing come out, so I was gagging, you know, and
terrible.
Temperature, I still have the temperature because it came back since I've been home. That's easy to fix. So you just take an ibuprofen or something, but you know, I'm just giving you the sign. So I'm kind of happy that I still have my taste. And I still have my smell. I'm going to say this real quick. I know a lot of people that have got the COVID and have lost their taste and smell. And do you know, even though they're black negative, they have not got their taste and smell back?
Wow.
I'm like, oh, my God, Jesus, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine that. So I'm grateful. I'm grateful.
Yes. Well, I'm grateful that you're here, and I think you're amazing. I mean, you're sick, but you're still here. Yes, you are.
You know? Oh, I'm always here for the cause.
And that's one of the things that makes you so special. A lot of people I know, they go, ooh, you know, that type of thing, you know, but Michelle, you're here. Okay.
Y'all need to know that Carol is my best friend, and she's my sister. I love her, and I'll jump mountains over her for her. So it don't matter what's going on. She called me, I'm there. That's just the way it is. And and don't nobody have well, Carol and Brother Bill. Other than that, I don't know. You can try to find me because I'm always on the go. Even sick at home, I'm always on the phone or something.
I know.
My sister called me. My sister called me, and I said I would be there. Yep.
Wow. Yeah, I think you're great. I absolutely do. And I thank you so much on such short notice, you know. You know, people are just too upset right now. But unfortunately, I understand it. I mean, I go outside. Mm-hmm. To me, it makes no sense. They say, go out and get some fresh air. Is the air fresh? Where are people getting it from? It doesn't make sense to me. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God, I'm so glad you said that. Because you know why, Carol? This third strand changed everything as far as the atmosphere. I don't care what nobody say.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you go out, for me now, I mean, I can just sense the difference in the atmosphere. And what kills me is people walking around here as if nothing's going on. No mask, coughing and hacking. You know. Oh, my God. Restaurants is out for me. Because I got the COVID, I'm not stepping in nobody's restaurant. It's not happening.
I hear you. Mm-mm. I hear you. Well, you know, it's such a strange because, you know, like I know people that wear the masks and still they got it. So I don't know. And so I get hit with all these phone calls, you know, at 1, 2, 3, up to 5 o'clock in the morning at times. And then I go hit my shower. Oh, yes, I do, because I think, well, where was I today? Ew, I'm going to go take a shower, you know.
Exactly. So, really better.
Yes. You feel like everything's like germ infected or whatever. So I saw skin, Michelle, I saw skin under a microscope when I worked at Greystone.
Yeah.
It was part of lab. Ew. You want to see something ugly? Look at your own skin under a microscope. All right.
I don't know why
so
people
that's
feel
why.
Like that stuff attacks to you. No, seriously.
Well,
whatever's in the atmosphere, and if someone sneezes, it stays in the air for 4 minutes. So if it drops on you, it's going with you. That's first of all. So what makes you think whatever's in the atmosphere is not going to attach? Now, it was absolutely cold today. Okay, I can see it doing a lot of damage towards the COVID. But Sunday, it was not cold. I'm not saying it was hot, but it was not cold. I mean, I was smelling germs in the air. In the air in this restaurant. Oh, my God. I knew it. And I kept saying, oh, my God. Some keep telling me to get up. But no, I'm sitting there with my friends. And then it got on me. By the time I got home, I was done. But
yeah,
praise God, I know exactly what it is. They shot me over with a whole bunch of antibiotics. They drew blood, they took X-rays and stuff like that. So I'm just in quarantine at home, but it's all good because thank God for the phone, I can work from home. So, you know, volunteering, taking calls.
It's got to be because, you know, like my son's a truck driver, you know that. He works for waste management. And, okay, it's garbage, all right? So...
Mm-hmm.
But two of his buddies died, and they were only in their 30s, all right?
What?
And within days of each other. Now, look at the job they do. So you think about germs in the air. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
and they're all suited up. They wear gloves and all this other stuff, and still two of them died, and they were only in their 30s. They've each had children. What a shame. What a shame.
That is so sad. This thing is
serious. It's so sad. Yes, it is. But,
oh,
you know, I just, you know, I use hand sanitizer. I put my mask on. Do I believe in the mask? I don't know. But I just put it on. And I don't know.
Please keep putting it on.
We have to do what we can do. That's all. And,
Please keep putting it on. This is thing is serious out here. It really is.
I know.
It really is. Yeah. I want you to use wisdom. And I want you to stay safe. Because I'm not trying to be funny. When it first hit the first year, and they talk about mask, I ain't wearing no mask to get in my, I can't breathe. To get in my, man, listen, I started keeping up with what was going on, watching the stats and stuff, and I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to go ahead and use some wisdom here, and I'm wearing this freaking mask. And I keep gloves in my car, so when I go to the grocery store, I put on a pair of plastic gloves. Because
that's right. I've got them too. I've got them on the back floor of my car. Yes, I do.
So
that's right. But that's all we can do. You know, we got to keep our faith. Got to keep our faith. You do the best you can with what you've got, and you know, that's all we can do. But I don't want people to get hysterical because. But we're speaking the truth. Okay.
I don't want nobody to get hysterical, but I'm doing it, and the reason why I say that, I want it to be a wake up call because this is real.
Yeah.
You're talking about
somebody's
life.
I've lost family members, honey.
Come on now.
I've lost family members. Yeah.
I never thought I would get it. This is the third year. I've been doing good all this time. That's why I was so able to zero down where I got it from. Okay, nobody convince me otherwise. I know I got it from that restaurant. That's why I called them. You know.
Well, you know, I lost a friend. I used to sing with her because we were the Fab Five in New York City. And also she's dead. She's gone. And then we had people that, you know, in my family, on extended family, you know, where the kids married into. One died, and the others got sick. Look, there's got to be something out there, or people can't get it. All right, if it's not there, then you can't get it. All right, so only makes some common sense. But
right.
On the other hand, I'm not going to let it rule my life, so I can't, because otherwise I'd be staying in the house all the time. You know, I don't want to do that.
After my quarantine, I'll be going back. Business as usual. There would be masks on at all times when I go into any business. There would be gloves on at all times. I wasn't wearing gloves all the time. And I'm going to be honest, sometimes I don't even put the mask on, but this changed everything since I got the COVID. I know people say they had got it two or three times. I don't want no two or three times. This one time is enough. My bishop told
me,
because he called to check on me, and he got 9 people in his family. That's him, his wife, his grown daughter, her husband, and the 2 kids and the other kids. All 9 of them got the COVID at the same time.
I saw it go through a family, too. I know. I saw it go through a family, too, on my daughter's extended side, if you will. I mean, we're not blood, but, you know, I mean, we're still family, though. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But anyway, one thing that people have been talking about, and this isn't helping it any, but how long have we felt alone as survivors? You know, I get people to call me and they say, I feel so alone. Maybe they were in marriages that failed, you know what I'm saying? Or even long before that, they were going through alone time because they felt that so often they felt, especially as they were growing up, that, you know, being abused only happened to them. Okay, they didn't think. They were just children. They didn't think, you know, that other kids were out there, and they were getting abused too, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, it actually, especially if people don't get help, Michelle, if they don't get help of some sort from somewhere, then they're going to go through, you know, life, and they're going to feel like, you know, that they have that empty feeling. There's an aloneness there. There's an aloneness there.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear it so often from the survivors. And, you know, the result is never ending. You know, we always look for love and acceptance. Remember that song, Looking for Love and Acceptance in All the Wrong Places?
All the wrong places.
All the wrong places, baby. Yeah. Well, I could sing that, but I won't now. But, you know, the point is we do this.
Yes.
We do this. So often, you know, we, because we didn't have the proper nurturing that we needed, you know, when we were a kid, what do? We grow up, we have no guidance, and we end up, you know, seeking many times, and this is awful, but seeking many times the people that we grew up with, thinking that that was normal behavior.
Because that's all
so
we know.
Well, when we choose our spouses or when we choose our significant other, you know, with that, maybe just living together, whatever, what do? We choose people many times from the families from which we came, because this is all we knew at that time. That's what we
knew.
That's
what I said. Absolutely.
And, you know, I always tell people, you can't expect normal behavior from people who are not normal. And that goes for us, too. Okay?
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Until we get the help that we need, you know, as a survivor, and you as a survivor, until we get that help and we figure, try to find out what that emptiness is inside of us. And so often it's that child that wasn't, you know, given guidance, wasn't given love, wasn't given the proper tools to grow up in this world that we were brought into. So, therefore, we end up as people. Now, I was a people watcher, not because I'm a weirdo in that sense, but I didn't have any guidance to, even for of any kind at home in the situation I grew up in. So I had to learn from watching other people what I thought to be was normal behavior and what was abnormal behavior. And, you know, I came to realize in time that what you have to look for, you know, in people who are not acting normal, watch out. And what does that mean? That means, you know, maybe they're out, they're into drinking, drugging. Of course, I was too. You were too. So often, so many of we, the survivors, in order to ease the pain and to fill that emptiness that we have inside, we do get into alcohol and drugs. I was a pill popper and drank, and they were both downers. I shouldn't be here. So God didn't want me to die yet, so he wanted my big mouth to go, so here I am, you know. So, but it's so often, you know, the case. And it makes you ask questions about yourself, too, especially when you start realizing. You start looking at yourself. And without help, you're not going to like what you see, because all of a sudden realization comes. You watch TV. There used to be newspapers, okay? You're reading the newspapers. There's still some newspapers, I guess, you know. But they're not like they used to be, not as thick. But you learn what's proper, what's not proper. And if you do really bad things, then, of course, if you're a kid, you go to juvie. And if you don't get help, then you end up many times, you end up going to jail. And not that you learn anything good from there. It's just a matter of containment. That's the way I look at it. I used to work juvie, so I know. It's like containment. And then you go before the judge, and he decides what's going to do with you. And so all those years that we're growing up, and, you know, we spent so many years seeking intimacy through empty sexual encounters. That's what it is. That's so true. I found an article that I so love, and I would love to have him on the show because he's so spot on. He's so spot on. That's David Pittman. He's a very good writer. And not only is he a very good writer, he's just plain very smart. And the way I can't read what he wrote, but I can take things from it, and then I would love to have him come on the show. He had been on the show, I think, once years ago, and now it's time, way past time, for him to come back, because we could learn a lot from him. And, you know, so he speaks about, you know, connection. I can use the word connection because that's what it is. We feel disconnected so often. Now, how does that affect us? We're supposed to be able to walk up straight and tall. This is how I look at it. This isn't his exact wording, believe me. But I walk up straight and tall, And, you know, I should have the confidence, okay? Today I have far more confidence than what I did as a child. But I always felt separate. And separate means that you're not a part of. I didn't feel like a part of society. I didn't feel like, I certainly didn't feel a part of my family. And actually, I kind of thought at the time that that was pretty much okay. Right? Because, you know, I saw what they were doing, and I did question it, okay? And but unfortunately, I did also repeat some of what they did because I figured it was okay. They're doing it. They're all doing it, right? Whatever it might be. And I didn't go to juvie, but I didn't get caught. I was an athlete. they couldn't catch me. So my friends, some of them got caught. They went to juvie. I ended up working in it. There you go. But do you know what I'm talking about? I mean, the feeling of disconnect.
Of
do you know what that is? Yes. And there's so many people. Go ahead.
The disconnect, people got to understand that when you are abused as a child, you know, whether it's mental, emotional, spiritual, physical abuse, all that is bad. And then let's talk about women and domestic violence. We seek love and attention. Once you get out of that situation, once you not heal, because a lot of people, because you got to find, well, I need attention, I need love, and I can forget about what happened. But predators seek that. They can sniff out. It's like a wounded animal. So if you're wounded, a predator can sniff you out, and they will come at you all nice and stuff. And tell you exactly what you want to hear until they get you trapped. That's just one part. Let's talk about the other part. The other part is a person, they're so lonely and they out here seeking it that they go seek it in all the wrong places. All the wrong places. They go on dating sites. They go, and I'm not judging dating sites. There's nothing wrong with it. You just got to be careful. But I'm talking about for the ones who are totally lonely, their radars are not up, so they're vulnerable. They're more vulnerable on the dating site, is what I'm trying to say. You got them going out, and, well, I'm not going to put no name to it, but I had a client who, she was so lonely, and she was so hurt because she hated men, and she wanted to make them pay. And so what she did, she would go to truck stops. This is a woman that is a professional. You would never think that she would be the type of woman that does that, but she felt like if she could make them do what she say, that she's hurting them. But she didn't understand. I had to help her understand it, and it took time, that every time you go to a truck stop, you are hurting yourself. One, you're not getting paid back to a man. You're hurting yourself. You're hurting yourself physically, emotionally, and mentally, that's first of all. You're taking a risk. Two, you can get kidnapped, be taken in human trafficking, or murdered. And when I found out how long she was doing this, it was nothing but the grace of God that kept her. And I thank God that he used me, because it ain't got nothing to do with me. It's all God. But she doesn't do that anymore. I thank God that she doesn't do that anymore. And once she started her healing process, and I'm going to say a year later, even though she stopped for a year, right? So here, a year later, and she's doing real good in the tools that was given to her to help her in her journey. Do you know it didn't hit her what she was doing? And one day in the office, I'm sitting with her and I'm writing, and she just screamed like, I can't believe I did that. I said, you can't believe did what? I can't believe I went to truck stops. It just hit her what she was doing. It was like she went into this whole different personality when she was out there doing those things. you know? And she didn't even realize the danger until a year later of doing it. So people that are lonely, don't judge them. People that are lonely is because when you've been abused as a child and the person who abuses us is an adult, we're supposed to look up to these adults that are supposed to protect us, and we end up getting abused from them. And so you grow up, and then you try to attach yourself to someone to give you attention, you know? You seek attention. We at that time, that time for me, sought attention. If someone gave you attention, that was like going to Disneyland. You jumped all over it. And then you get let down. And then you go back to whatever you was doing and using when you medicated, whether it's alcohol, drugs, or whatever it was, whatever it is. I can personally say, you know, for me, it was sex. And I didn't even like it then, but I did it. And then it was drugs. And it was this, I felt like, okay, I'm doing this to them, it's payback. But unbeknownst to me, that I was hurting myself every time. And during this time, I didn't even believe in God. I mean, matter of fact, during this time, I was a devil worshiper. You know, I was a witch. So I really didn't care. I had so much anger in me. At the same time, I had so much loneliness. I just wanted someone to hold me, to be with me, to be a friend. I just felt so lonely. I just felt so lonely. And that's not a good feeling. And what my heart go out for right now, Sister Carol, is that it's so many people that are out here lonely, especially during the COVID time. You know, since the world changed, it's really bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
And that's why I'm so happy that we're here 6 days a week, or 5 days a week, that, you know, hopefully the word can get out, that they can call in on shows like this, or if not, call the they got 24-hour hotlines. That's what I want to put out there. Please don't be at home spilling all this by yourself, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, they got 24, and then Carol, she's on our website. I'm on the website. We take call. When Carol, we night owls. So, you know, I mean, I get people that call me at the wee hours of the morning, be like, I'm so sorry to call you. I'm like, don't be sorry you called me. That's what I'm here for. Sometimes people that are lonely, they just want a listening ear. They just want to know that somebody's there. You know, I get calls all the time, and I'm okay with that. That's what I'm calling here to do. Why? Because I know the feeling that they're going through, not what I heard, because I experienced it. And that's why me and Carol is here as one of the night owls. Right, Sister Carol?
That's absolutely right, Michelle. And, see, it's real easy for me to stay up late anyway, and I think it's twofold. It's twofold with me.
Okay.
Number one, yes, of course, you know, the jobs that I worked, a lot of times I had to do shift work in hospitals and detox centers and all that other stuff. And so I was used to doing shift work. And then number two, a lot of my abuse, a lot of it, not all of it, but a lot of it, that was in the house, whether I was at home or living in the other house, I call it the pedophile house because that's where the pedophile was, right?
Okay.
And he'd come in. I'd watch the doorknob, and if that doorknob was turned, it wasn't quite light out yet. It was sort of like, you know, just starting, the sun was just starting maybe to come up, you know, just that type of hour of the day. And I'd watch. I would actually, if I did fall asleep, I would actually wake up. It was like body response. And I'm watching that door to see if that doorknob is going to turn, because if it turned, he was going to come in, okay?
Oh, wow.
And I knew what the heck I was in for then, and it was disgusting, right? It was disgusting. One time I tried to fight back, and he almost broke my wrist. My wrist is almost broken a couple times by men. They're not nice at times, you know. They're crazy sometimes. So anyway, I never resisted again because I didn't want to get hurt. It was in the winter, and probably maybe closer to 6 o'clock. What time does it get light now? 7, somewhere in there, between 6 and 7, I guess. But the point is, so the point is this, that I decided that I was never going to resist again because I didn't want to get hurt again. And people were saying to me, what happened to your wrist? Why is your wrist so purple? Why is it so swollen? And I lied. I said I fell on the ice. You see, that's how I remember that it was winter. And because I was so scared to death. And you see, another thing, too, that we know as survivors, and all the many articles that we read, all the many things that we're taught, we know that it's all about control and fear. You know, like, you're going to get killed if you tell on me. And kids believe that. They absolutely believe that. And, hey, look, sometimes it does happen, I have to admit, all right? So, but for the majority of the time, you know, they don't want to get caught and they'll take off or whatever, especially if they're not in the house, all right? They'll just move on. I got out of that house, that's what that guy did. He moved on to a neighborhood where there was some other little girl, and her father walked in and caught him. Oh, yes, what? Honey. Oh, yes, he did. And there was street justice. He almost died from the beating that he got from this man. And I remember him. I remember this guy. He was a really big, you know, husky guy. And this stupid uncle of mine, through marriage, removed, if you will. He was a skinny, small guy. But he was out there doing his business, all right? He was out there raping kids.
Oh, my God.
So he walked in on it, the father, and he beat the living daylights. I mean, from what it went down through the grapevine, from what I understand, it took him months. No one called the cops, mind you. No one called the cops.
Why would they? The nasty perverts.
Yeah, you know, really. So I felt a little bit better, I must say, okay, when I found out he got a whooping like that, because let me tell you what, he's out there, and, you know, if he goes from one to the other, we know this is what they do, and I wanted some sort of justice, and in those days especially, they didn't call the police most of the time. I mean, one time they were called, you know, from a guy who attacked me in Staten Island when I lived there, but the other times, no, and then certainly not with this man. I call him a man. And so I was glad he got beat like that. But I always tell people, though, look, you want to get a couple swings in, knock them out, whatever, go ahead. But call the cops. Because, quite frankly, you know, we have to get these people off of the street. Okay? We've got to get them off the street, Michelle. Now, so what did this distant uncle of mine, because it was a great aunt that was taking care of me, so therefore he was like a great uncle, so he's not blood or anything, he's on me. But anyway, the point is, when he healed, he put his house up for sale, and he moved down Florida, he and his wife.
Oh, wow.
They had no children at all, thank God. Yeah. So they moved down Florida, and he continued to do what he had done, because this is the way that he is. He's a pedophile.
Even after getting beat up.
Well, I lost track of it after that. I didn't hear any more about him. But he's been dead, of course, for many years, because this is years ago that it happened. So I'm glad he's dead. I'm sorry, but no, I'm not sorry, because that's one pedophile that's not going to go out and rape more kids. How many kids did he rape? Who knows?
Right.
So you see, what I'm saying here is if you just give a person a beating, I mean, I can speak raw because it's you and I, and people should hear it anyway. But if you just give people, you know, a beating, that's not good enough. You have to get him off the street. And that's why you call the police department and you say, hey, I know this SOB and this is what he or she, it can be a she too. We don't talk enough about the girls, Michelle, the women. But this is what this so-and-so has done. And then you get them off, hopefully off the street. The problem with all of that is most of the time they do not get what they deserve, even in the justice system, okay? Some people think they should be killed. You know, they should go to jail for life, or they should be executed, or whatever that state allows. You know, all states are different. But the maximum sentence, because when you rape a child and you're a serial rapist, which is what he was, and I had a couple of those, when people are like that, for God's sake, they don't belong in society. And you can't fix them. Too many studies have been done. You cannot fix them. Okay. Now, that's my opinion on it, because look at all the years that we're the survivors. Look at all the things that we go through in our life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had post-traumatic stress disorder so badly, and of course, I'm sure you did too. And we turned to alcohol and drugs, you know, to feel better, to get through the day. To try and fill what's empty inside of us and all this other stuff, that feeling of loneliness, for God's sake. When I was a child, because there was no loving in my house at all, I mean, no pats on the, well, maybe a pat on the head if I did something really good, that, and they were in a good frame of mind, but there was never any hugging. Sometimes I'd feel like hugging myself. I would, like, take my arms, because, you know, children that are in orphanages, this is very sad. But if the nurses don't give them, you know, the babies the proper, it's more than just nourishment, but the proper holding and playing with them a little bit or something, for God's sake, a lot of times those babies don't thrive and some die. They just simply do.
Right.
So when we're growing up, you know, we need to have hugs, we need to have love, we need to have encouragement. And I think a lot of the loneliness that people speak about, and even the articles that we read, is because we didn't have that. Maybe we were being pimped out, you know, as kids. Many of us have come from families where, you know, we were actually being trafficked out, you know, and I had a monster. I'm going to call her a monster in my living room. I didn't know she was like this when I lived in Hackettstown. And I've told you this, but I'll tell the public this. She was a friend of my husband's, okay? And she was a prostitute, and I didn't know it. I had no idea because I didn't know the lady.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you know, we're talking about kids, and the kid was 9 years old that she has a child, a little girl was 9 years old. And she said, well, it's almost time for her to get out there. And I said, what are you talking about?
What?
Get out where? Oh, yes. And I said, what are you talking about? Get out where? She said, on the street. I said, get out on the street what? To do hopscotch? I don't know what you're talking about. That made no sense to me. It never occurred to me.
How old were you when you were hearing this conversation?
I was in my, I was around 30-ish. I was around 30-ish.
Okay, I know you, but what did you do after you heard her say that?
Oh, honey, I threw her out of the house. I kicked her ass and threw her out of the house. That's what I did. I said, how dare you? How dare you? Because you know what it did? It triggered me. Because when I was nine, living in New York, I was just about 9 years old when I got kidnapped and raped. So I'm thinking in my head, I mean, you know, when you get triggered, you get triggered. And I'm thinking to myself, here this monster lady is pushing her own daughter out on the street, right?
Oh, my God. I wish that child was taken away.
Well, I gave her a good
hand. Have her child.
I kicked her so good. Well, I threw the guy out, too, who was a friend of my husband's. He didn't know this lady either. I have to admit, Marty did not know who this lady was. It was a
but
friend
I mean,
of his
I
friend.
But, I mean, I just wish the child would have been taken away from her.
Of course. That's what needed to be done. But you see, just like with the man who walked in and he saw his daughter being raped. Okay?
Oh, my God.
He just, like, you just act, okay?
That's right.
And that's exactly what I did with this lady. I didn't think. I just acted.
Right.
And I didn't even know where she was from.
Wow.
I never saw her before. So I threw her out with a good kick in the butt. And I took her friend, which was Marty's buddy, I took him by the arm and I said, you get out, too, and don't come back. How dare you bring someone like that into my house?
Yeah, I know that triggered you big time.
Oh, I was livid. I was livid. And Marty didn't object to my behavior because he didn't like it either. That's
right.
Disgusting. And let me tell you something, Michelle. He grew up in Brooklyn with this guy. They went to school together, okay? And he didn't know that he was doing some of the things that he was doing. And
wow.
even he was disgusted. So there you go. There you go. But, you know, another way... That it affects our relationships, okay? Because I know this even with myself, all right? I know this. We survivors, we have problems
That's
in
right.
so many different areas of our lives. I might go out with a guy. I have this guy right now who wants to take me out, and I'm very hesitant. But he has a nice bike. I'm so bad. But anyway, all right, whatever. But he might be a very, very nice guy. He might be. But so many times in my life, I chose poorly. So I don't know if I want to go out with him or not.
Don't rush it. Make sure you feel right about it, you know.
Well, I sense a little something funny, but I don't know what it is. You know, I really don't know what it is because I don't know him well enough.
Girl, if you're sensing something funny, you stay with that sense that you're feeling now.
It's only been about 3 weeks.
I tell people all the time, like when you start, but listen, when you start feeling stuff, I tell people all the time.
Yeah.
Whether it's a thought, whether it's a gut feeling, you better stick by that. Better stick by that. Don't let that go over your head. That's something we did when we were abused. We missed a lot of stuff. Now, don't do that. You know, you get signs. You get a sign. You get a flag.
I think you're right.
Yes.
He's a nice looking guy. You know, he's got.
This don't mean nothing.
No,
it's a whole bunch of pedophiles.
That's where it goes back.
That nice looking
guy. You're right. My first husband looked like a movie star, and he had bikes. I love bikes. I love to go riding. I really do. I have to admit it. All right, so, but he turned out not
to. Looked like Denzel Washington's brother. And
I hear you.
Come on now.
That's right. So, you see, looks are not everything. People have to understand that.
Ooh.
Okay, what do we have in common? Think about what do we have in common. All right, with me, I love to go, you know, riding. I haven't done it in a while. Well, I don't want to go riding right now. I'd have to put those things on my my legs and everything. It's so too cold out. Too cold for me. But,
yeah.
You know, the point is that, you know, okay, we have that in common. He likes to sing. I love to sing. And he knows people. Maybe that where I could go singing again, get back into that. But there's just something, that's just not quite right, and I don't know what it is. And I think to myself, he's clean cut. He seems very nice. He opens the door for me. So did my first husband. He opened the door for me. He pulled the chair out for me. What does this mean? All right, he's going too far overboard. You know, you can do that. You can go too far overboard, and that doesn't mean that the person's a good person. So I've got this little funny feeling about him. So I'm probably not going to go out. No, I mean, I've been with him a couple times, but that's it. No. No. But
yeah,
then,
but
then, though, Michelle, there are those nice guys, okay, or you know, nice girls, whatever, that we what do? We sabotage. We actually sabotage the situation because there is a part of us that is so filled with fear because
Absolutely.
We've made so many mistakes, okay? So we can actually ruin, you know, a relationship out of fear. I did that some time ago with someone that I really cared about. And it was a fear factor type thing, which other people don't want to deal with, and I don't blame them, all right? So, you know, but, you know, it just screws us up, doesn't it? That's what it does.
Yeah, I agree.
So that we, you know, get into relationships that are bad, or sometimes we sabotage a relationship that could really be good. I'm not worried about this guy I was just talking about. I've only seen him a few times, and I'm staying away from him. Something's not right, and I don't know what it is yet. And I don't want to know what it is, all right? But you know, in the future, you know, like maybe a couple weeks from now, maybe a month from now, I'll meet some guy that, you know, that's really a nice guy. Now, I'd like to, you know, go out and have a good time. But and I just hope I don't sabotage a good relationship. We have trouble figuring out good from bad when it comes to relationships because we took so much garbage when we were a kid with people who treated us poorly. Okay, and that's it affects us. It affects us until we learn how to choose properly.
That is true.
So what do you have? When you meet a guy, you want to go out with him, what does he have to do for you, Michelle, before you can realize this person, you're not going to sabotage, you don't want to sabotage this relationship? What do you
look
for?
Well, this is my suggestion. This is my suggestion, you know, and this is the way I do it because of the pandemic and what's been going on. Meet someone. I do virtual. I do a lot of talk on the phone, and then I like that one-on-one video. We can see each other because you can get a feel of the person, and you spend time doing your virtual for a while. Then pretty much either you're gonna be comfortable after a while, or you're gonna sense something that's either wrong. Then if you sense something that is right, then you plan a date. But I don't just immediately just rush to go into a date. I need to communicate with you for a while. I need to talk. I need to do a video. See how get the feel. That's my suggestion. And,
I think that's
and
a
it's
good
working.
Suggestion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm single. I have dated, and this is what I do. You know, so this is a new thing now. And if a person say, "Well, I don't want a video," that's a big flag. Block their number and run. Because you don't want to talk to them. Because if a man don't want a video with you, or a woman don't want a video, they're not the one. Because they really like you, have interest, they would be happy to video. Because that's the new thing now, is virtual because of the pandemic. That's what everybody's doing now. Give a chance to date. You know, it's been time to get to know somebody.
I hear you. I'm laughing because there is this guy. That was, I'm not going to say he was posing because I do believe he was a doctor. I believe that. You know how, you have to be careful, you know. When you go online, a lot of times, all right, people, they go into my website and it's, you know, you're able to do that. They see the presentations I've given. They get an idea of what I look like because I'm being photographed. And some of the pictures are good, and some of them, they're not so good. So what, so what? They get the idea. And I had this guy that was trying to date me from a different state, okay?
Okay.
And he was looking at my pictures, and he said that he was a surgeon. And so I showed him on the couch with a dog, and he looked like a nice-looking guy. He really did.
Mm-hmm.
And then he showed pictures of him in the hospital. He's in his scrubs, you know, he's in his scrubs, and along with other doctors. And
okay.
I do believe that he's a doctor. I believe that.
Okay,
but,
then start doing virtuals, video chat.
Well, that's the problem. That's why I'm laughing. Because
you
said to me, and now you've said to many, many people who are listening tonight, and I can tell that there's a lot of people listening. You said that you know, do virtuals. Okay. So in one of the
video.
Things he wrote me, one of the things he wrote to me was, the heck with this stuff. I'm coming up. I want to meet you. I want to meet you in person. I go, I don't really
know
this guy.
Okay. That would be a no. Okay. Request a virtual, a video chat. And anybody say, well, what is that, that you need to lose? If anyone's, I told this one girl came to me, she said, the person said they didn't know what a video chat was. I said, block the number and keep it moving. She said, why? Everybody knows what video is. Please.
Mm-hmm.
This is the 21st century. That's a flag.
That's right.
He's a doctor, and he can video with you. Ask him to do a video with you. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You got your computer. You know, you got a camera on your phone, right? I mean, on your laptop.
Oh, yeah.
You can do a video. It's that simple.
I have mine taped right now. I don't know why. I put that on a long time ago. But, I could, I could do that. And, but if he wants to come up here, now look, he's a surgeon. He probably makes a lot of money. Okay?
He does.
And he could probably well afford it. Okay? So, but
okay,
on the
I'm
other
sure
hand.
He's a surgeon, but that don't mean nothing.
No, it doesn't, see? It's going too far. It's going, too far too fast. And he wants to come
up
here.
It's not about going too far. If he's a real thing, then he's excited. He's ready to come and see you. But that's when the gentleman of him supposed to pop in when you say, look, I need to do a video with you. We need a video sometime. You know, let's video and get to know each other. Then we'll plan something down the line for you to come and see me. I appreciate that. But let's do some video here and see what he says. And if he's with that.
I'm going to do that because, you see, you all right?
Yeah, bear with me. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm going to see if he'll go along with that. I mean, he's a nice little guy and everything.
If, I don't care nothing about him looking nice. I want you to mention the video, the video, and if he says no, that's a flag.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A real man would have no problem doing the video.
I think that's good. That's really, 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 really good advice.
I'm gonna tell you. Let me put it out there real quick. Well, I said strongly. Okay, you got pictures and all that. The video will match his freaking pictures before you meet in person. I tell people all the time: get the pictures first. Second, do the video, because you already got a picture, and when you see him live on the video, he better look like that picture that you've seen.
Because
they shouldn't have nothing to hide. So, whoever this person is, you tell him you want to do a video. If you say, well, you got no pictures, those are just pictures. I need to see you live on video.
Right.
His answer would be, sure, no problem. But if his answer ain't sure, no problem, that's a big old flag. Run. Sorry.
Well, you know what? It's just like I used to watch Dr. Phil because my husband loved Dr. Phil. He really did. And he'd watch it every day. And here come those ladies, they come on, and they thought that they, they had found someone, and they were talking back and forth. you know, on the computers and all this other stuff and on the phone. And it turned out, you know, these people, you know, got news for you. They were just being used because, you see, most of them are widows. Well, of course, I'm a widow now, too. Oh, my God. But, you know, I've been for 5 years. But, you know, the point is they know how. They know how. This is what people have to watch out for. They know how to get a hold of women, you know, that are widowed and all this other stuff. And the pictures that they show are not really them a lot of times.
Yeah.
It's not them.
Why do you think I said do a video? You got the picture,
right.
And his picture should match. His live person when you see him on video should match that picture. That's when you're gonna know, and they should not have to have a problem with that. Period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. So you see, these are the things that we're living in a terrible world right now. I mean, I don't even like to watch the news every single day, and I'm a news buff. All right. But because every day it's getting worse, you know, this is happening, that's happening, and all this other stuff. So I've got to watch what I'm watching because I can get triggered at times, you know, with certain things. So I stay away from horror right now because I feel like there's too much horror. I want to look at more horror, you know what I'm saying? And I don't watch the news as much. And that's what I tell people, too, when they call, you know, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, whatever. A couple of them, I put them to bed. That's what I do. It's so cute. And those two are girls. The gals are cool. And they've already, you know, they're on meds, and they've already taken their meds, but they need to hear my voice. You see, they're alone, Michelle, okay? They're alone.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to hear some comfort or something. I mean, just whatever, a good laugh, because I make people laugh a lot. So, you know, whatever. And sometimes one of those phone calls, especially, it'll only be like 10, 15 minutes. And because she needed to hear my voice. So we have people out there that are so lonely, okay, that they need to hear the sound even of another voice and some nice words, something of encouragement, you know, whatever.
It can be that, but I also, this is what I recommend, because we both understand what it feels to be lonely. We've been there. So this is my suggestion. Okay, either call in on here, either call them 24-hour hotlines, or you can find something in your home that can occupy you, that would keep you from being lonely. And people say, well, like what? For me, very simple. Because I don't have that lonely thing anymore. I got past all that, thank God. So I enjoy my company, okay?
That's right.
So I find something that entertain me at home. So I'm a big movie buff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I do a lot of taping and DVR, you know, my DVR. And I can watch movies all day. And I'm going to be honest with you, if I'm not on the phone ministering, if I'm not counseling, I am in my DVR, honey.
Mm-hmm.
That's
I hear
just
you.
Me.
I hear.
Now you can find some people. I know a lot of people that like to paint. I know a lot of people that like to read. I know a lot of people that like to knit. You know, I know people that they're collectors of stamps and coins. See, you can take these things and allow it to occupy you where you won't feel lonely as much until you get to the point where you're comfortable with you, because I mean, we can't expect for people to be. I'm not going to expect for anyone to be where I'm at. No,
right.
But
right.
You can gradually get there. In the meantime, we can help you get there. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, either NASCA, you know, and they always have these 24-hour hotlines. You know, if you need someone to talk to, they're there, in place. You know, and then of course, somebody again, they hear our voice. You know, there's Carol Levine. She has her number and email. There's Minister Michelle Bless. You know, which my email and my phone number. We are here. You know, I'm available 24 hours a day. And believe me, if I don't get back with you, all you got to do, I'm going to be honest with you, I see a text faster than I see, than I would see a email. I would see a text quicker. And I respond to texts. If you just say, look, I'm, you know, you ain't got to say your name to say, you know, I heard you on NASCAR, I would like to talk to you. And I would text, okay, I'm about to call you now. And then you'll see my number come up. And I'll either be your listening ear, or if you want to talk, I'm there to listen, or unless you want me to talk to you. Well, either way, however you want it, I'm fine with either or, whatever makes you comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right. Absolutely.
And if you decide to call my phone, leave a voicemail. But I always stress the quickest way to get me is through a text.
That's
the
right.
Quickest way to get
you
faster, immediately, in a matter of seconds, I will see that text, and I will respond. Because I keep my phone right by my ear. So now that I'm quarantined, February 2nd, it's totally by my ear.
Right. I feel so sorry for you. Oh, my God. You know,
no,
I'm a dangerous person because my phone is right by my ear, too.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about the landline phone. I have several different kinds of phones in my house all over the place. And, you know, sometimes I'll answer the phone. I don't know who the heck I'm talking to, and I'll hang up and go, what? That happened once to, not yesterday, a couple days ago. I had to call them back, the number, because I didn't know what they said. You know?
Yeah.
So I've decided that I'm not going to keep my phone right next to my bed. I've got to wake myself up enough to get over to the phone if I do happen to be able to go to sleep. You know, say I'm in bed, it's 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, taking my shower, I'm in bed, and all of a sudden, when I'm out, honey, I am out, okay? So if I hear the phone, then I get up, but, you know, and I will talk to them, but it has to be away from my bed because at times, you know, I've done that a couple times. So anybody out there, if you call me and I act like an idiot over the phone, just call me back, okay? That's all I can tell you.
We're always here.
We are here. Michelle and I are here. There's probably other night owls, but I really don't think so, Michelle. I don't know of anybody else, to be honest with you. I have a list.
I don't either. I'm not
trying
to be funny. I don't see... I'm not saying that they're not available. I just feel like me and you are more available,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
because of, I mean, God has blessed us where we don't have to work. So he takes
right.
care of us. So we got that time to give more of is what I'm trying to say. That's why I'm more available.
Yes.
You know,
because
I only work part-time. I'm actually retired. And so I only work part-time, but I choose my own hours. So I'm always available, honestly. Well, you know that, girl. I'm always available, so.
Oh, yeah, no, I hear you. I know that. I'm so thankful you were around tonight. But, you know, one thing I want to make mention of, too. Okay, those of us, once in a while, we get someone on the show that claims that they never got into alcohol and drugs and all that stuff, and they would use other things, okay, to fill that hole, as I call it, inside their body that they're feeling in their heart. In their spirit, okay? You know, and it could be overeating or it could be other things. They could be sex addicts, it could be anything, they could be gambling. Oh yeah. How many of those people that go, you know, to the casinos? I know I have friends that do that. and guys have asked me out, I've turned them down. Oh yes I have.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to the casinos because quite frankly, Michelle, I'm home, but if I go to the casinos, I might lose money, and then I will have to go back out and go to work, won't I? So, okay, I don't want to get in that position.
I like to see my money going. I can't do it. Unless somebody take me and they give me their money to play. Other than that, no, I'm good.
That's right.
I can't.
Hey, look, that's not going to work for me. Three guys in the last couple of years have asked me out who are such casino freaks. One over by my son, and two from around this area. And they wanted me, casino. I will not do it. I won't let my dude. Look, you don't win all the time, people. And you do get, that's another addiction. All the addictions that people have who are trying to fill that hole because they were so abused as children, and they're still trying. They could still be in their 50s, 60s, 70s, whatever, and they haven't gotten the help that they needed, and so they're still doing something to satisfy them. I have to watch with shopping, okay? I have to.
Yeah.
Because, you know, otherwise I'll overshop, okay? And so that's another thing. So, you know, once we finally get clean, okay, and remove the fog, because that's the fog of narcotics. I got heavy into Quaaludes years ago and drinking with them, Michelle. Oh, my God, yeah. It's amazing I'm here. You know, you have to, you're not going to heal if you're popping pills, okay? I have to tell people this.
Yeah.
You know, all right, I got a bad shot in my arm. We all know this. And I have, you know, opiates, you know, that was given to me. I don't want them.
Yeah.
I have a whole vial. And I've taken maybe three of them because, you see, if I allow for myself, I have addictive personality, you know, of course. We many times do. And if I start liking it one night, I feel, whoa, I like this. You know, I didn't go on the show that night, okay? So, but, you know, that's the way we can become. And sometimes it's very innocent. I mean, I deserve not to be in pain. But on the other hand, I know with my personality as it is that I could, you know, turn into someone that would pop too many pills. When I worked at the methadone clinic, we had two doctors come in, and one was for his back, and the other one, I forget what it was for. I chose the one with the back problem, but anyway, to work with him. We put him on a 30-day, that's all, a 30-day detox of using methadone, started him out at 60 milligram, and we tried to pull him down fast through almost 30 days, maybe a little bit more than that, if needed be, and I think it was more than 30. But the point is to get them off of that. And did it help? I don't know. Maybe they liked the methadone then. Maybe they had an addictive personality, you know what I'm saying? But
yeah. What
you have to watch out for is that we tell people all the time, if you drink, if you're a drinker, if you're, you know, alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic, you know, go to AA and take it seriously. Is it going to help you overnight? No. You have to learn how to live. You have to learn, you know, the steps are there. There's a reason for the steps to be there. I had to listen to the steps. I'd sit there and yawn and go, yeah. I was such a punky kid, you know, yeah, whatever. And but then I realized that, you know, if I want to get on with my life, if I want to start feeling better, I have to not, you know, I have to stop drinking. Michelle, I was scared to death to do that because
right. That
was my crutch. That was my crutch. I was out working at times drinking, not on the job, but I'd come home,
yeah. Take
care of my children. I was like an alcoholic, but I was a good alcoholic in the sense where, you know, I was taking care of business, all right? Ooh, that was a good song, taking care of business. I remember that from years ago. But, you know, going to work, taking care of the kids. I was a functioning alcoholic. That's what I was.
Yeah.
But I was not, I had a long ways to go on my healing journey because I hadn't really even started my healing journey. I didn't look at myself as an alcoholic. I looked at myself, you know, as I go to work, I have children, I take care of them. I was in between husbands, if you will. All right. I have to be responsible. So I thought to myself, well, if I can be responsible, then I'm not an alcoholic. Well, yes, I am. I'm, you know, I drank until my kidneys pounded, okay, and my fingers swelled. And I said, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
And I detoxed myself. I stayed home from work. I detoxed myself. I stayed home 3 days. I put the kids with on the farm. You know what I mean by that? My mother, they have all those flower farms. And they stayed there, and I didn't know if I was going to have a seizure or anything. But I knew, I knew why I was drinking. And I also knew that if I'm going to heal, I had to make a decision, Michelle. That I had to get out of that fog, because I wasn't going to heal unless I started looking at myself. And it's not always pleasant. Even though we're survivors, it doesn't mean that we didn't do some things that we shouldn't have done either. I can think of several things I did as a kid that I should never have done. Places where I was and what I was doing, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to, you know, do self-inventory, okay, in AA.
Ooh, that's good. Yes, self-inventory.
Yes.
Talk about that.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's exactly what I did. If you've hurt someone, and don't think that we couldn't hurt people, too. We may have been
that's
victims,
right.
But we mm-hmm. made mistakes, okay? We didn't have any guidance or anything. I'm not going to, you know, I said I'm sorry to the people who would accept that.
Yeah.
Except for me
yeah.
to come over to them and say, hey, look, I did this to you. I am really sorry. Will you forgive me? I'm asking for you
yeah.
for your forgiveness. Sometimes
yeah.
they would, and other times they wouldn't. But at least
mm-hmm.
I made the attempt, okay, to go to that
yeah.
person, all right? And with other things that I did in my life that were not very good, I couldn't make good on, you know, good for them, because some of those people died and had nothing to do with me. They were in alcohol
yeah.
and drugs too, all right? But that self-inventory, and you know what? That's nothing to be ashamed of. People have to learn that out there. Because
mm-hmm.
you're better for it. You become a better person.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And you become stronger. You can say then, well, I did this and I did that, but I know better today, and you not do it. And that automatically
yeah.
makes you a better person, okay?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And that's probably one of the hardest steps, you know, that I had problems with, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and letting things go is not always easy. We can't let go of the past. We just simply can't.
Yeah.
But what we can do is we can do the future. We can plan for the future. We can work today as today is, okay? And we can look
yeah.
ahead to the future, making short goals. And I say short goals, especially to those who are just starting on their healing journey. Whether
mm-hmm.
you are a part of AA or whether you're going to a therapist or a counselor, Michelle and I are each are counselors, you know, whatever,
right.
it doesn't matter. Or whether you do it on your own, all right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Make you know, it's okay to make goals, but make them small, because especially if you're an alcohol or drug addict like I was and am.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you make the goals too big, you will crash. You will
absolutely.
Crash.
Yeah,
yeah,
and we shut down right after that crash. And
that's
that is
right.
not what you want to do. So don't overexert yourself. Don't overdo it. You know.
Yeah.
Don't think that you got to do everything right there at that moment, because you don't.
You know I'll tell you
stuff.
What. Well, when I was living in, this is Warren County too, when I first moved
mm-hmm.
to Warren County years ago now, I was going to work in this drug alcohol place. I'm not going to say the name of it on air. But
yeah.
it was very well known, and movie stars went there. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't say who it is, because someone might be listening. But the point is, I couldn't even wear makeup, Michelle, if I was going to work there. Hello. Are
why?
You crazy? I
why
didn't
not?
Understand that. I don't know.
Okay.
All I know is
I
the lady, the one. I think that's stupid. And so.
Yeah.
The director was on vacation, and her husband worked there also. They were on vacation together. And I had to sit there and observe. It was a beautiful place. And movie stars could afford it, right? So anyway, the point is, But I saw some things that I didn't like, the makeup thing. Look, I'm not the one that's here. I'm working. I haven't had a drink in years, and all this other stuff. That shouldn't matter. And I didn't like some of the other things that they did. So I decided that I wasn't going to work there. But her husband
right.
fell from grace. Now, he isn't sober. Yes. He fell from grace. That's another reason why I don't want to mention the name of the place. He
of
fell
course.
From grace, and he had been sober for, I think it was like 15, 20 years he had been sober for, and he fell
okay.
from grace.
Wow.
So you see, yes. And what I learned with all these different places that I've worked, and you and I have worked in the same, sort of the same lines, absolutely all the way,
yeah.
to, whether it be detention or shelters or whatever, all right, nothing on
both.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yep.
It doesn't matter.
I did both like you did. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that's why we can always talk so easily. But anyway, you know, the point is, I want people to understand that a lot of those people came from backgrounds like we did, right? And
absolutely.
And that's why, you know, at least they found themselves enough that they realized they needed help, okay?
Absolutely.
So I give them a lot of credit. So the shame is not, and that's something to talk about also, the shame is not ours, okay? The blame
right.
is not ours. We were just kids.
Just babies, that's
and
it.
We had to find some way in life, whether, you know, some of my friends got into cutting. Okay, they were cutters. That was terrible. Others over eight yeah. or under eight, they were either anorexic or bulimic.
Mm-hmm. And all
others
that comes
were
into, good. When you
yeah.
see five people cutting, they being sexually abused.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You bet.
I would cry. I would literally cry when I found out that some people, when they do that, that they felt comfort in doing that. It gave them comfort or a sort of relief from the torture of sexual abuse. I can never click that together, but I did not allow myself not to understand. Don't get me wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because the
right.
same as this is how I connected to. I went and did drugs. And I did drugs, okay, and heavy,
mm-hmm.
and I felt mm-hmm. heavy, and it gave me comfort, and it medicated my emotions. And so for a cutter, that would be the same thing to them.
Yeah.
To numb their pain. It numbed
yeah.
their pain, not even realizing that they were inflicting pain. So, but yeah. Oh,
so
Jesus.
You see, when they, I know, God help them. When they,
yes,
I had
baby.
A friend that had it all over her legs. She wasn't trying to hide it. That's a scream for help, okay?
Oh,
she had
yes.
it, she had it all over her legs. And I remember I caught her. I said, what are you doing? Why do you do this? Why do you do this? She said, well, I said, doesn't it hurt? She said, it hurts, but it's a good hurt. That's what she said.
Yeah. I
she
heard
said,
that before.
It's a, yeah, oh, you've heard that too. Well, you would too.
I heard.
All right.
I heard. Mother
yeah.
said that.
There
yes.
you go.
I had one that
and
got to the
word,
point where she was so numb that they didn't even, you know, that because the pain in their mind that they're thinking of that sexual penetration from a freaking adult going into them as a kid, and they needed something to ease that pain. And the cutting eased the pain. The cutting was less painful than the actual sexual trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, girl, it breaks my heart. Do you know if I was to catch somebody doing something to a child, God help they soul, because he's going to have to hold me back. Cause I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you. I am, you know, we're advocates, but I would not stand by ever if I ever see it or find out that a child is being abused. That child's not going to spend another day in the house because I'm going to do everything in my power.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
That's why I thank God that I know people in high places. You know, I work around prosecutors and defense attorneys and judges, and so I got to do is say a word, and they're going to investigate right then and there. If I call to put in something, that child's going to be removed that in that second.
That's right.
So I thank God for giving me that power for the area where I'm at. Cincinnati, Fairfield, Westchester, Middletown. Yeah.
Yeah.
Louisville,
but you're
Kentucky.
All over the place, Michelle.
I'm all
you
over the place. Columbus,
over.
Dayton, yeah.
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 And the things you do wondrous work. You absolutely do. God has given you the gift, okay, to be able to reach out, you know, to people and to do things. And there's some of us
and
that
so
have
do you,
that.
Carol. Carol,
well,
you have that gift.
I had the gift. I had the gift.
You,
we got
you,
the COVID.
What I love about you, but what I love about you is how you, it's so easy to draw people to you. And the second thing I love about you is that, you know, when you give love and compassion, it's genuine, and people can feel that from you. And that's what survivors and victims need. They need to feel that compassion. They need to know that it's real. Because I tell people all the time, first of all, if you've been abused as long as I have, I know fake when it comes my way. Because we got this guard. We as survivors and victims, we got this protected shield. And we know bull crap. We know
that's
it when
right.
it comes. If it ain't
that's
real,
right.
we ain't with that. So
that's right.
You got to be real when you come to people that have suffered trauma. You know? Oh, I think the thing about the worst one of all, I remember one, this speaker, whoever, I don't know what she thought she was doing. I had to check her. I didn't mean to, but she went overboard because people were talking about their trauma, and she was like, well, you ain't never been sexually abused, so you don't know what that is. I tried to downsize her mental abuse. I mean, an emotional abuse. I said, excuse me, because I was on the panel. I stood up and put my hand on it. I said, excuse me. Because I watched the young lady sit down and start crying. And I pointed at her. I said, let me tell you something, sweetie. I said, physical, mental, sexual, emotional, it's all abuse. It's abuse. We don't have no board talking about from 1 to 5, which one is best or which one is what. We ain't on that. And I looked at her and said, you mean? She's going to say, she's going to throw her degrees. I said, your degree, have you ever been abused? And this would have made her mad. I said, have you ever been abused? And she said, well, no, I came from a good home. I said, that's your problem right there. You can't read. I've been to college. I don't care how many degrees you got. Your degrees can't count or no experience of real life.
That's right.
You think
right,
you know
sure.
somebody's pain because you went to school to learn about it? Woman, please.
I know. That, and, you know, I shouldn't laugh. It's good to have education. We have education. But if you haven't walked in our shoes, okay?
Let me tell you something.
You can't walk that walk.
Yeah, I'd rather talk to a person that is a survivor.
That's right.
That can tell me something versus a freaking doctor behind a desk.
Exactly.
They can try to tell me something.
People exactly.
Clean. And the
that's
whole
right.
room started clapping. And she said on the panel, well, I never, and I said, you never will. You dismissed. And I didn't invite her. I was one of the panelists, but she got up and turned red and left. I didn't care. I didn't care.
Well,
talking
well,
about.
What you said is right. If you haven't walked our walk, and if you can't talk, you won't be able to talk our talk. Do you know if the show is over? It went that fast.
Wow. Okay, y'all. Whoever's listening, Jeremiah 29, verse 11 through 14, and Psalms 91. And if God didn't tell you, well, let me correct that. If no one didn't tell you they love you today, God loves you and I love you. And get me and Carol's number and name, which is Michelle Bless, off the website, please. Anytime you need someone to talk to, I'm here. Go ahead, Carol.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Michelle. It's always a pleasure to have you on, and we always have a very good show. This was a very good show. Yes, it was. So anyway, I will be talking to you very soon. And
yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much, and I love you. You're my sister. That's who
I
you
love
are.
You too. You know I'm in quarantine, but you better call me if you got any more days. You better call me if you're on tomorrow. You remind me.
Okay, well, I'll keep that in mind. I'll give you a call in a couple of days anyway. I want you to rest now. Thank you so much.
I'm good. You are so welcome.
Okay, honey. Okay, I'll talk to you later. Okay.
Okay.
Bye. Good night. And
good
night, everybody. God bless this world, and we need it. Yes, we do. Good night, and God bless.
You are forgotten after all that you've done. Blog Talk Radio.